Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast, where we explore cutting-edge strategies to keep teams human-centered, drive innovation, and empower you with the tools and insights needed to help your team excel and thrive in today's changing world. Your host is Dan Groeneveld, a seasoned expert with over 20 years of experience enhancing team dynamics and innovation. In today's episode, Dan sits down with Mickey DeVoe, Director of the Leadership Institute at MD Anderson Cancer Center. As a director of the Institute, Mickey provides oversight for coaching, mentoring, change enablement, team science programs, interventions, and consultation. With nearly two decades at the institution, Mickey has been at the forefront of developing emotionally intelligent, mission-driven leaders who embody MD Anderson's powerful ethos, making cancer history. Together, they dive into what makes great leadership in complex, high-stakes environments like healthcare. They unpack how MD Anderson cultivates a coaching culture where everyone, whether in a suit, a lab coat, or scrubs, is considered a leader. Mickey shares how purpose, storytelling, and servant leadership transform not only teams, but entire organizations. It's a conversation about the human side of leadership, connection, courage, and the pursuit of meaning in a world increasingly shaped by technology and change. So, teamwork makes the dream work, and we're here to inspire your next collaborative breakthrough. Gather your team or put on your headphones, and let's dive in together.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. My name's Dane Groeneveld, and today I'm joined by Mickey DeVoe. Mickey is the director of the Leadership Institute at MD Anderson, and we had the opportunity to sit down to a dinner talking about all things leadership and teamwork last year. So it's great to be reconnecting, Mickey.
Same here. Thank you so much for the invitation. I'm honored to be part of this podcast.
No, it's going to be a blast. Let's start by you and your story. How did you come to be doing this cool work around leadership at such a great institution?
Great question. So I've always been fascinated by human behavior from a very young age. Perhaps it's because I'm the middle child. I don't know. but I have been just driven by why do people behave differently? And especially if we look at the family dynamic, I have two sisters who are very much alike. And one of the things that baffles me is how can we behave differently when we were raised by the same people in the same environment? And that kind of fascination with human behavior has lasted me for a very long time. I was one of those weirdo kids that knew that they wanted to be a psychologist from a very young age.
Love it.
And decided to pursue psychology in general. And then eventually wound up in the whole idea of business psychology or organizational psychology. And found my passion for helping individuals find their purpose and be their best selves. And I do that through coaching, through mentoring, through leadership development. And that work landed me at MD Anderson. Another weirdo thing about me is I am one of those less than 3% that actually never applied for their job.
Love it.
MD Anderson was one of the people that found my resume on a job bank and called me up. And that was over 18 years ago. And if you know anything about MD Anderson, when MD Anderson calls, you answer.
Yeah.
So it's the number one cancer hospital in the world. So for someone like me, who has always been interested in human behavior and always wanted to work for an organization that was mission driven and contributing to something much larger in society is one of my purposes. I could not say yes to MD Anderson.
That's brilliant. I've heard the stories, I'm sure a lot of listeners have, around, you know, MD Anderson being so mission driven. And, you know, you can ask the story goes, you can ask the person who might be cleaning the corridors, you know, what they're doing. And it's, you know, we're here to solve cancer.
Yeah.
Which is insane that it just, it lands that way. It's very intentional, no doubt.
Yes, very much so. Our tagline is making cancer history. So there's multiple ways in which we do that. One is to eradicate cancer, but it's also in our research, in our clinical, our therapies, our advances, is how are we, what are we doing to advance the treatment of cancer? Because it's not going away. I don't know if you recently read some of those articles that are now connecting sugary drinks to colorectal cancer in young people and how cancer is just on the rise in young individuals. So it's unfortunately, it's something that's not going away. We have to continue to pursue treatments and hopefully the cure.
Yeah, we've seen back in my home country of Australia, we've seen insane increases in young people. I think 300-500% increases in colorectal cancer. It's problematic. I think sugar is a big one. We still don't know what microplastics are doing to us. We don't have enough research in that space, I don't believe. So you're right. Like it's going to be an ongoing battle. So it's very meaningful work to be out there participating in.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. Very much so.
So many things I want to dive into today, because I would imagine when you're running leadership across a large healthcare provider that there's a lot of different types of people, a lot of different functions, you know, a lot of different flavors of leadership. Where do you start with, going back to your point there, in helping leaders find purpose and their best self? Is that once people get to a certain level of leadership in an organization, is it on their way through the journey of being a team member, moving into a first team leader role? Like, I'm just intrigued to see what you see working out there.
We believe everyone is a leader, regardless of your job, regardless of your title. One of the things that we often talk about is everyone is a leader if you're wearing a suit, a lab coat, or scrubs. It doesn't matter. So our leadership development is centered on our core values and our leadership characteristics, which has an incumbency model that's associated with it. And there's a lot of research that we've done in reference to all three, our values, our leadership characteristics, and our competency model. We looked at those who were most successful at MD Anderson and analyzed what makes them successful. What are some of those traits, those characteristics, those qualities? And that is what we train to. And those characteristics are the same regardless of what level of leader you are. Now, the scope and the responsibility and the depth of them and how they show up may look a little bit different depending upon your level as leader, but the expectations are the same. We expect everyone to be emotionally intelligent. We expect everyone to have a drive, the drive to move forward, results orientation, that idea of self-initiation, et cetera, self-motivation. We expect everyone to be professional and what that means. So we expect everyone to have these certain elements of what we call service excellence, recognizing that each one of us is responsible for our ultimate stakeholder, which is our patient. And how we treat each other is a reflection of how we treat our patients. So our service excellence is about, not only are we providing the best possible service to our patients, but how are we treating each other?
Yes. I love that. And when you think about that, Mickey, it was designed through the study of what was already working in the organization.
Yes.
And then when you go into deploying that, I heard you say core values, leadership characteristics, and competency model. For example, when we look at that drive to move forward, is that a value? Is it a characteristic? Is it a competency? Where does that sit in your framing?
So drive is one of our leadership characteristics.
Got it.
And drive is a universal leadership characteristic. So regardless of where you are within the organization, it's an expected leadership characteristic. As is professionalism, as is emotional intelligence. when you move up the ladder, so to say, there is increased emphasis on the idea of capacity building and knowledge sharing, which are two other leadership characteristics, and accountability. So those three, although we talk about them at the individual contributor level, the scope of responsibility for each is slightly different.
That makes total sense. That's neat. So this ties into your, you know, not just leveling and titling of roles, but it does tie into your career development. So if you're coming in and having a coach attached to you, you kind of know what you're working into.
Yes. Yes. Brilliant. And associated with that, we have our own 360 that we developed based upon our leadership characteristics and our competencies. It's often the foundation for all of our coaching. And we have various different assessments that we use throughout our leadership development curriculum that allows us to pinpoint and target various different areas of development. So we also use the Hogan Personality Assessment as one of ours, and the EQI, because we are so, we emphasize emotional intelligence and servant leadership, that the EQI is one of those assessments that's out there that's a developmental assessment, but it's also one of the only ones that's validated for selection and hiring purposes.
So, yes.
We're very specific on the assessments that we use, how we help people move up the ladder if that's what they want to do. And we also have those conversations with individuals about, well, what is your idea of leadership? How do you define it? And let's share with you, oh, this is what it means to be a leader at MD Anderson. And here's all the extra responsibilities. Because sometimes people just want to be a leader because they want more money. And like, oh, there's some other stuff that goes into that too.
Yeah. Yeah. I was actually in the Bay Area last week for a conference, and I met with one of the large tech platforms. I won't name them. And I was talking to their head of talent development, talent management, and they were suggesting to me that there is a lot of strife right now in their organization because they have promoted very unique talent in the tech world, particularly in and around AI, in order to keep the talent. But they've promoted them not on first principles, not on leadership characteristics or competencies. And so they've got these dynamics where there's a leader who's functionally very brilliant, but isn't bringing the right leadership behaviors to the team. And that's a problem in one team. When you've got it across six teams, just the friction, the challenge, the breakdown in communications, it's extremely draining.
Yeah. Yeah. And has consequences on the teams that they lead. Like, no one wants to work for a jerk.
No.
So,
yeah. And I know a few friends that work for some of those platforms will be sitting there saying, my leader won't even sit down and talk to me. They want me to drive everything through Slack, right? We get to sit down once a quarter for a lunch
meeting.
Oh, wow. That
breaks my heart. Yeah.
It's rough. Mm-hmm. It's super rough. To that end, you know, it sounds like you've all built a very structured approach to career development and to what it is to assess leaders and teams. You know, where does the role of the leader themselves fit? You've got a leadership institute. A lot of organizations have large HR or talent functions. And I continue to run into this conversation of the lost art of leadership, you know. Have leaders outsourced all of these conversations and the coaching work to the specialist function? And are they themselves playing enough of a role in it? How do you see that in an organization like your own?
Yeah, that's a great question. I have a couple of thoughts that are jumping in my head. So perhaps I'll just kind of share
them.
We can weave them together. So for each one of us, at MD Anderson, we talk about how it is a shared responsibility to lead. And with those characteristics that I had just gave you a little bit of a preview for, the expectation that each one of us is exhibiting those characteristics. And we're provided with feedback on whether or not we're hitting the mark. One of the things that we emphasized in this is the idea, and I'm going to tie coaching into this, is that everyone is expected to be a servant leader, and we're going to give you the tools in order to accomplish that. So we offer coaching to everyone across the institution. They can sign up through what we have a program called a Coach Finder, in which they can preview profiles of our internal coaches who we have certified. So we have a coach education program that we run at MD Anderson. It's in conjunction and partnership with Rice University, where we provide the International Coaching Federation accredited coach education program where we are training our leaders to be internal coaches. So not only do we talk about how you need to coach and develop others, we give people the tools and the training to do so. And in order to get into this program, you have to agree to pay it forward. So what I mean by that is you have to coach at least 3 leaders annually post-graduation. So that the skills and the tools that they've learned don't die with the graduation. It's expected that they continue on in this tradition. And as of right now, we have over 200 leaders across MD Anderson who are certified internal coaches. And we have a wait list for people who want to get into this program.
Wow.
It is an incredible program. And when we take a look at some of the data in reference to it, those 200 individuals, they talk about how engaged they are. They stay longer with the institution. They're more likely to be promoted. They are the leaders that are sought after in mentoring roles, in leadership roles, in stretch assignments. This idea of how to be a coach, how to be a leader, not just a manager, is perpetuated. It's like a snowball effect. And people see it and they want to be a part of it. There's a lot of like really great positive energy around it.
That's very cool. Yeah, I knew that you'd had recognition for how you've built the coaching culture, but just the structure, as you described it there, is really powerful. And I'm particularly intrigued by the fact that you made it opt-in. Because I know some companies are like, well, we need to coach all leaders to be more of a coach. But sometimes I would imagine that waters down the efficacy, where by having this opt-in to a certified program, you've set the bar very high from the outset, by the sounds of things.
Yeah, I firmly believe that not everybody makes a good internal coach. They might be a better mentor than they are a coach. Now, there's still the expectation of what we call the little C of coaching, that you coach and develop your direct reports. But when we talk about the big C of like being an internal coach, it's about how do you have formal coaching relationships with people across the institution. And that is not something that everyone is suited for. No. And that's okay. That's okay.
That's fascinating. We've seen, talking to a few guests lately, Mickey, that in the age of AI and remote work and other tooling in the way that we work, which I know is not as similar in a very frontline oriented organization like healthcare, but you see it to different, I guess, degrees, that intact teams are becoming more engaged. However, across teams in an organization, we're seeing a breakdown in engagement. You know, when you've got cross-functional working groups, and I can only imagine that's very critical in your industry. So are you starting to see, you mentioned increased engagement, increased promotion, increased retention, but how is it driving like the interprofessional connectivity, relationships, energy in the organization, where you see those coaches coming to bear in departments that aren't their own?
That's a great question. So there's a couple of things. I think one of the things that helps us within healthcare, it's about your connection to others and your connection as a leader to everyone we serve, not just our direct reports, but our peers. and ultimately our patients. And coaching is an avenue that allows you to connect through genuine curiosity and non-judgment. So we see those leaders who have gone through Coach Rice are intentionally put in roles that require that cross collaboration because they have the skills to do it. Now, AI can augment that connection, but doesn't replace it. At least that's what we're seeing. There's so much possibility with artificial intelligence. It is such an exciting avenue to pursue. And at the same time, I truly believe in my heart of hearts, it will never replace that connection, that human to human connection.
Yeah, I actually had Anne Gutschall on the show the other day, and she and I were talking about just the chemistry, like the oxytocin release of having a human to human connection. And no matter how good AI gets, it's not the same. Even just you and I having this conversation over, you know, a web interface, even though we're two real people, it's still not the same as if we were having this conversation in a room. So yeah, that human connection, I totally agree with you. It's going to likely increase in its role for organizations and for teams as they can create more space for these coaching moments and being more intentional about how we team.
Yeah. And if I take a moment and just reflect on who do we serve at MD Anderson, our patients, these are individuals that have gotten really bad news and are struggling with, what do I do next? How much longer do I have? And replacing that with AI, it just does not make sense to me. And I would argue that a lot of our, we call our physicians faculty at MD Anderson, a lot of our faculty be like, oh, absolutely not. I want to connect with the patient. It's in that relationship that sometimes the patients find hope and they can live longer, a few more weeks, a few more months, a few more years. So we have that potential to have that kind of impact.
Yeah. I must admit, I've been sharing some stories. I love the way you frame that, Mickey, with a few collaborators in the industry lately around how certain industries are better at this work than others. And one theme that I'm seeing is when you find an organization that is very focused on human outcomes as the product of their work, they tend to do a better job of team dynamics, leadership, capabilities, characteristics, and just building positive organizations. When you have a company that's very focused on a widget as the outcome of their work, not necessarily how the end user is using that widget, then those organizations tend to be a little bit stuck in like efficiency over like human energy and experience. So it's just something that strikes me that when you share that story, it's like, yeah, the fact that you connect it to what the patient is going through, it draws the whole way through the organization.
Yeah.
Yep. It's very cool. We also talked when we met there, it was actually the National Center for Healthcare Leadership Conference last year in Chicago. We talked a lot about this concept of mattering. So when we talked about different departments, you know, the surgeon and the nurse, for example, how do they each understand how their work matters to the end patient? And so we were getting into that construct, and it's kind of like, well, where do you build that awareness in teams to say, if you do your part of the job right and I do my part of the job right, we're going to, you know, be more effective as a team. Are you seeing coaching as an avenue for doing that, or do you sense that through the Leadership Institute there are other ways of kind of building more of that awareness of the significance and importance of each role in the process of providing this healthcare or doing the research?
So yes, I see coaching as having one of the potential interventions, but it's one of several that can help a team be more cohesive, effective, etc. Some of the things that we have done at MD Anderson, some research on, is on the idea of team effectiveness and what are what we call the ABCs of team effectiveness. And that idea of clear roles and responsibility in connection to the ultimate goal or outcome is something that I think we do really well at MD Anderson. So although within an operating room, there's a hierarchy, you need every single person for it to work though. You need to have clean instruments. You need the technician who's doing that. You need the janitorial staff who's going to clean up after this so that the next session is in a safe, secure environment. Everyone contributes to it. And I think one of the things that we do really well at MD Anderson is articulating that and making sure everyone knows how they make cancer history, their contribution. So I know in the beginning you were talking about a story about how you can just go up to anyone within MD Anderson and you can ask that question. And they will say wholeheartedly, I am making cancer history. And they articulate how they're doing it, even though from an outsider perspective, it might seem like a minor thing, but there's so much passion that's centered around that. And to be able to be part of that, to be part of an organization whose sole purpose is to eradicate cancer, and to have so many of us who've been touched by cancer in some way, shape, or form, that's what keeps me at MD Anderson, that mission-driven organization that I can't seem to find anywhere else, nor would I want to look for it.
Yes. I love the way you tie the team effectiveness, not just to clarity of role and responsibility, but that connection to the ultimate goal or outcome. I think that's a gap for a lot of teams. I think we see a lot of teams that have wonderful missions and they have some clearly defined roles in the organization, but people can't join the dots. They don't know that, hey, the work that I do allows my team member over here to then take it to the next level. And I think that joining of the dots is a big opportunity for any team, no matter how small you are, no matter what product or service you offer, to say, hey, let's just pause for a minute and look at how this piece fits in. And again, going back to this theme of efficiency, in organizations that have optimized for efficiency, we had a guest, Michael McCarroll, on from Team Rotary, and he was talking about like the Formula One pit crews. And if you optimize for efficiency of each task, the overall pit crew performance is worse. So you actually need to optimize for the collective group of tasks. So they run some really cool exercises just to help teams realize, I know you could put that tire on in 1.5 seconds, but you need to do it in 3 so we can put the gas in the car at the same time.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Which is so cool.
Mm-hmm. That is very cool.
What might those interventions look like? Is it a lot of documentation? Is it sending team members out to kind of review, peer review work, coach in the field? What are the ways that you're able to, because I would imagine work practices are changing. They're never constant. What is it that allows you to drive that sort of team effectiveness infrastructure, Mickey?
So I think there are a couple of things. One is that the leaders of the team are really dedicated to that ultimate outcome and recognize that there are ways that they can do it better. Might not be faster, but they can do it better.
Yes.
And to have employees who are willing and able to get that done, because it ultimately helps the patient. So having that leadership support and sponsorship is one of the things that really helps almost cement the idea of a focus on improved effectiveness as a team. Without it, we've seen things kind of just fall to the wayside. And it becomes much more about revenue generation. Let's get a new patient in. Let's get a new patient in. And that's missing the mark of what we want to accomplish at MD Anderson. Yes, we want to see as many patients as possible, but we want to help those individuals. So that sponsorship is really critical. And it's not just like face validity sponsorship. It is true sponsorship, which puts a lot of onus, a lot of responsibility on the leaders. It's why we have things like the Leadership Institute, why we have things like coaching to help the leader kind of really champion that role, own it, and really articulate it for and embody it for everyone. So there's lots of different resources that we provide to our leaders so that they can do that, so that they can effectively sponsor. And when there's an effective sponsor and someone who is charismatic and will be vulnerable and admit mistakes and encourage others to do so, learn it, use it as a learning environment, create that psychologically safe space for everyone, it just perpetuates productivity and getting to that ultimate outcome. So again, it goes back to, we put a lot of responsibility on our leaders, which is why at the Leadership Institute, we offer so many different resources to help our leaders be the best that they can be.
That's so neat. It seems like it's not boot camp. It seems like there's a constant cycling through to access those resources. How do you find you're able to make the time and space? Most organizations are suffering from this like cognitive load and we're busy. Are there like particular seasons where you bring people through periodically, or do you find that shift scheduling allows for professionals to be coming through more in the flow of their work? I'd love to understand that.
Yeah, that fabulous question. I wish I had all of the answers. I can tell you about, like, we're an academic medical institution, so we work on fiscal years. So we see like a renewed interest in team effectiveness and goal setting around the beginning of a new fiscal year. And we capitalize on that. We get lots of requests to run retreats. We get lots of requests to do kind of after action reviews or SWOT or SOAR analyses for teams to help them get an understanding from a very evidence-based approach on how well they're doing and where are the gaps and what can they focus in on. So in terms of increases in work or access to resources, we see that a little bit. And one of the things that we often talk about is the times that you feel overwhelmed is the times that you need a coach.
That's a great indicator.
That's the time when you need to reach out. It is incredibly difficult for individuals who are the best in their field. I've gotten there because they didn't ask for help from anyone else. And now we're telling them, let us help you. You have to ask. It's a really hard transition for some.
Yeah, I can't say that I've operated in a field anywhere near as technically complex as what your teams do. But even on a personal level, I found that the kind of hustle culture and grind of the first 20, 25 years of my experience, just like go find a way to do it and do it. It's taken a bit of time to kind of deprogram out of that and actually embrace coaching and the time that's required to go out and, you know, explore team dynamics. And I think that's true for a lot of smaller business owners and executives in large corporations that have kind of been in that hustle culture too.
Yeah. One of the things that we've done that helps us with this mind shift that we're asking is we've have another a number of leaders who we've worked with that kind of followed that, but they did that shift in perspective. They reached out for help. They've had some really fabulous success. And we have them be our champions.
So they're doing their own storytelling in the organization.
They're doing their own storytelling. Yeah. And that's a fabulous way of putting it, Dean. And we actually asked them to come back to leadership development programs and share their stories. So it's a way that we kind of continue to perpetuate that cycle of, oh my God, here's XYZ who struggled, worked through it, accessed resources, and had a fabulous result. He admitted, or she admitted, that they struggled, and they got the help that they needed. It's okay. And as you probably have known, I can guess, I can sit here and talk about how great all of our coaching programs are, how great all of our leadership development programs are, but it doesn't mean anything unless Absolutely it's actually not. Someone who is a consumer of it and talks about it.
So. Yeah. Well, I often use the analogy of going to see my physical therapist. I've suffered with some back and neck and shoulder problems from rugby and other adventure sports. And I'll tell my teams, hey, my therapist can tell me exactly what exercises I need to do and what volume and what times of the day. But that doesn't mean I'm going to follow and be compliant with the plan. there needs to be an attachment to that outcome, like you talked about earlier. And then there needs to be that mindset shift that this is really worth me investing my time in. Which actually brings me on to the next question. There's a lot of research right now on fear and fear being an obstacle for individuals that stops them from going and doing their best and highest value work. So in that case, an example might be my physical therapist told me I should do an hour of stretching a day. And I wake up in the morning and I'm like, oh, I can't take an hour away from my work day or, you know, being present with my kids. And I'm afraid of what that looks like. So I just don't create the time and space to do it. Where do you see fear showing up in professional ranks around just coming in to start doing the self-work that often coaching entails?
So what immediately popped into my mind is a running joke that some of us have is like, oh, let me pull up my couch because it's now therapy. And that fear of judgment, that fear of analysis comes up a lot in coaching. So I think the idea of explaining what coaching is and how it's different than therapy is really critical in the very beginning. As you're establishing like confidentiality and the ground rules and the agreements of what the coaching relationship looks like. I also believe that part of the job of a coach or any leader is how do you reframe the fear? How do you reframe it in a way that it's not something to avoid, but what do you want? What are you looking for? Let's dream big. So Richard Boyatzis is a researcher and very well known in emotional intelligence and coaching in particular. And the theory that he really talks about is intentional change theory. And although this is an incredibly dumbed down version, because it's how I make sense of it, it is what leads to sustainable behavioral change is dreaming first.
Oh, I love that.
Dreaming what could be and getting really crystal clear of what you want and that motivation behind it. And then talking about, well, where do I fall short and how do I close the gaps?
Yes. I really like that because a lot of people, you're so right on fear of judgment. A lot of people like, well, I don't want them to see under the hood into my, you know, fallible nature as a leader or what I am doing poorly on time management or whatever it is. But that positive framing of like, what is your dream? What would you like it to be? It makes the change and growth worthwhile. It means that going and doing that little bit of work every day and having those vulnerable conversations, you at least know what you're working towards.
Yep. And it's the goal. It's like your lighthouse as you move through what could be really stormy weather, and keeps you motivated. because you have a crystal clear view of where you want to go.
Yeah. Yeah. A final question on that. You talked about the storytelling. So like some of the leaders that have been through the Coaching Institute coming in. So that's great in the moment, you know, bringing them into a class or a cohort. But I would imagine those people that they're speaking to, they're already in the Institute. They're already the kind of somewhat aware. You know, if you're a leader out there in a business and you've got some real resistant elements of your organization, how might you encourage the more forward-leaning people that have had the good experiences with coaching or team effectiveness to kind of go out and kind of sprinkle the goodness in their organizations, you know, through the small stories, the water cooler stories versus the curated ones?
So one of the things that popped into my mind is understanding just like the change curve, like the bell curve. So I think the thing that hampers motivation and hampers people from wanting to even try that is they focus in on like the less than 8% that is never going to do this, that will forever resist. So what I suggest you do instead is get those people who are in the middle, who are more neutral, and how do you move them to more positive? That should be your focus, because it'll have significantly more positive effects for you, for your organization, and it'll like concentrate your focus on the people who are willing, open, and will get you to where you want to go. That 8%, like, I'm not suggesting ignore them. You have to pay attention to them so they don't infect the others, but you don't want to devote a whole lot of time to them. You need to devote your time to the neutral or to the positive people.
Yeah. It's the leverage. You know, you've got only so much time and resource.
Yes,
so where are you going to get that most leverage?
Use it wisely. Don't waste it on people that you're never going to convert.
Yeah, that's a great tip, Mickey, because, you know, coming from a sales and marketing background, I was always taught, you know, you go straight to your detractors because negative word of mouth spreads 10 times faster than positive word of mouth. But you're right. In this context, you know, you've got to assume if you're an organizational leader that you've already got a culture, a productive culture and an organizational mission and direction. So you don't have the negative word of mouth in that same way as you do in a customer relationship, and that leveraging the middle, bringing people up into being the champions and ambassadors is not only more effective, it's probably more enjoyable work for the leaders too.
Significantly so.
That's awesome. Well, it's been a wonderful conversation, Mickey. I love just how clearly you framed it out from like where we started at, making cancer history, very clear mission, very clear story. Everyone's a leader. I love that, whether it's a suit, a lab coat or scrubs. Like I just love the physical manifestation, the visual manifestation there. And then as you came through and talked to core values, leadership characteristics, competency models, these aren't things that just exist in the HR and people function, that they're actually being leveraged through the Institute, through coaching, through team effectiveness to really join the dots and help people grow. It's wonderful. It's great to see you modeling that. I think it's easier for me to contextualize and no doubt for listeners as they're starting to kind of work out where they are and where they want to go next. And then these kind of later elements that we touched on around, you know, the storytelling and around really having leaders sponsor continual improvement and identification of ways to do different and make better. It allows movement. It's not just a rigid, here is the standard operating procedure. So many great elements of building healthy teams.
Thank you.
Well, if any of our listeners want to follow any of your materials or, you know, reach out and ask for some inspiration as they're building coaching capacity or team effectiveness on their teams, where do they best connect with you?
Oh, that's a great question. So I do have a LinkedIn profile, and I am one of those people that has multiple names because I like to hide sometimes. So my full name is Michelle Figliolo DeVoe, And you will find me on LinkedIn under that name.
Wonderful. We'll make sure to add that to the show notes.
Yes.
All right. Well, it's been a blast reconnecting, Mickey. Thank you again.
Thank you so much for having me be a part of this. I appreciate it. And I appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just a quick note before we go. The views and opinions shared in this episode are those of our guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the host, Dane Gruneveld, the Leader Group, our patron Huddle 3, or our partners and affiliates. Any scenarios discussed are for the purpose of fueling creative thinking and conversation and should be viewed only in this context. Dane, Leader, our sponsors, partners, and affiliates do not endorse any guest or any organization they may be associated with. It's important to remember that every workplace is as individual as the people within it. Our recommendation is to always seek solutions that are specifically designed to help serve your team's unique needs. And to this point, please know we're here, ready to help you find the best way forward, no matter where your starting point is. You can connect with Dane or myself, Alicia McCraw, on LinkedIn or via the links contained in the show notes. Thanks again for tuning in. And hey, if you think someone in your network would benefit from this episode, feel free to share it or give us a 5-star rating. Those 5 little stars really help us reach more curious people like you. We'll catch you next time on the Future of Teamwork.